This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Senator Joe Lieberman announced on Monday that he's running for president. This week not only kicks off that campaign, it's the start of his book tour. The senator and his wife Hadassah Lieberman have written a memoir called An Amazing Adventure about the 2000 presidential campaign in which Joe Lieberman was the first Jewish vice presidential candidate. Yesterday, I recorded an interview with the Liebermans. In the book, the three-time senator from Connecticut says he will always feel that many more people went to the polls intending to vote for him and Al Gore, but did not have their votes counted. I asked him how his opinion that he and Gore should have won the election is affecting his interactions with President Bush.
People ask me, how do you feel about 2000? And I say what I think Hadassah and I convey in the book. I loved every minute of it until the end. In the end, was disappointing, infuriating, all of that. But I don't forget that, because there were a lot of people who tried to vote who didn't get their vote counted, and that's why we finally adopted election law reform this year. And I hope that President Bush will help us put some money in it to make it real. But it's my nature to go on, to learn from what happened. And as a result, I have a responsibility as a senator to try to work with the president when I agree with him, and to be honest enough to tell him quite explicitly when I disagree.
Your new book is about the experiences on the campaign trail, and you call it An Amazing Adventure. That's the title of the book. It also sounds pretty grueling. Hadassah Lieberman, how do you feel about going through this again and going through it with your husband being the presidential, not the vice presidential candidate, which will make it even more grueling?
Well, obviously, it's personally challenging to one's relationship and to one's family life, because that's just the nature of what a national campaign demands. But at the same time, it's an incredible opportunity, and it's important, I believe, if you believe in yourself, which Joe does and which we do in Joe and what he has to offer this country, to take that challenge and not shirk from it.
Joe Lieberman, how does candidate George Bush compare with President George W. Bush?
I hesitated a moment because I was trying to remember during the campaign. Look, there are differences here, and that's part of why I'm running. The president, as a candidate, promised he would change the tone in Washington, and the sad fact is that the tone is more partisan and polarized today than it was before he took office. And that's not just a matter of observing a conflict. It means that we're not doing what we should do to revive the economy, to improve our healthcare system, to protect our environment, to do something about energy, education, et cetera, et cetera. The president also campaigned on this promise to return integrity and honor to the Oval Office. And I think in too many of his policies, he has yielded to either big financial interests or extreme ideologues. And here again, I'm talking about environmental protection. I mean, it comes to mind. It's been important to me, a priority of mine for my entire political career. And this President Bush has torn apart a bipartisan consensus on protecting our natural resources and protecting us, our health, from air and water pollution that existed at least back to his father's administration, and in some senses back to the Nixon administration when the environmental movement started. So that one of the premises of my campaign is that President Bush promised us a better America in 2000, and 2 years later that promise has not been kept.
During George W. Bush's presidential campaign, some of his critics felt that he wasn't coming across as very smart. He stumbled a lot when it came to foreign policy and the names of foreign leaders. He wasn't well-traveled. Now he's facing a war with Iraq, problems with North Korea, a war on terrorism. Do you think that he is different now than you thought he would be? How is he handling in the international crises we face compared to how you thought he would do?
Mm-hmm. Any president in office learns. So I'd say on international and foreign policy, President Bush's record has been mixed. I happen to agree with him, as you probably know, in Iraq. I felt for a long time that we had to disarm Saddam or we would pay a terrible price for not doing so. I think that the president's response to September 11th was strong. On the other hand, I think he's been much more inclined to use the military and threats in regard to the Islamic world and North Korea than trying diplomacy, or with particular regard to the Islamic world, trying economic aid, better communication, creating more freedom in that world. I think the current crisis in North Korea has been the most inept chapter of the Bush foreign policy record, where he has been weak and inconsistent, and as a result, what was a difficult situation on the Korean Peninsula with a unpredictable tyrant, Kim Jong-il, has become a dangerous crisis. At one point, the president was against negotiations. Now, finally, he seems to be coming back to it. At one point, he took the military option toward Korea off the table for the first time since Dean Acheson did it prior to the Korean War, and some people think it helped to bring about, unfortunately, the Korean War. So it's a mixed record on foreign policy. And look, sometimes people say, a lot of senators are running this year, but there's a reason for that. The world has come home to America, and America needs strong and wise leadership in its relations with the rest of the world to protect our security and improve our economy. And I think senators have some unique experience. I certainly think I do, as a member of the Armed Services Committee, to bring to this most important job.
My guests are Joe and Hadassah Lieberman. They've written a new book about the 2000 campaign trail. It's called An Amazing Adventure. Joe Lieberman, you were the first Jewish candidate on a presidential ticket. You write in your book, "No one could predict how voters would take it. Would my religion become a factor in a close race? Was it worth the risk to see if the country was ready for a Jewish vice president?" You say that you suspected that the fear of anti-Semitism would be greater than the actual anti-Semitism you encountered. Did that prove to be true, and do you feel that you faced any coded anti-Semitism, anti-Semitism that was kind of, cloaked in other language?
No, I don't think I did, and I do think it did prove to be true. It was, in that sense, a very validating, inspiring experience that, the promise of America that we'll all get treated fairly, doesn't matter who you are or where you started. If you've got what it takes to do the job, people will judge you on that basis. I felt that all around the country. There was a rush of focus on my religion when I was first selected, for obvious reasons. I was a first. But by the end of the campaign, there was hardly a mention of my religion. And that's just the way I wanted it to be. I wanted to be judged on my merits or demerits, and that's the greatness of the American people. I think that's exactly what they did. People voted for what they thought was best for the future of the country, not on the irrelevant question of the adjective that goes before the important noun that describes me, which is American.
It's really good to hear that you don't think you faced anti-Semitism when you ran for vice president. The anti-Semitism factor has just changed a bit since September 11th. We've seen a lot of Islamic extremists see the United States as part of the Zionist conspiracy. Some extremists think the Israelis are responsible for the World Trade Center attacks. I want to read you something that was written on January 11th in the Daily Telegraph of London in an article by David Rennie. He writes, "Even commentators who profess no anti-Semitic beliefs have raised concerns about whether a Jewish president might be a liability at a time of Middle Eastern crisis and surging anti-Americanism in the Muslim world." What's your reaction to that?
Well, I think better of the Muslim world and the Arab world than to think that they will determine their relations with America based on the religion or anything else of the president. If you're president of the United States, this is the greatest power in the world, everyone else in the world will deal with you based on your policies, not on your religion or gender or race or anything else. And that's the key question. I mean, look, the United States today, unfortunately, is much less respected and liked in the world than we were 2 years ago. That has nothing to do with the religion of President Bush or anything. It has to do with his policies, the way in which the rest of the world thinks he's followed too often a unilateralist or arrogant foreign policy. And I think the world is much fairer than that commentary suggested. I can tell you, in my own career in the Senate, you know, I've spent a lot of time, because I'm on the Armed Services Committee, concerned about our foreign and defense policy, have had established long relationships with leaders in the Arab world. Just visited the Middle East over the Christmas holidays, mostly to see American troops abroad, but met with leaders in the Arab world and, you know, was greeted with great warmth and respect as a friend, as an American senator, as somebody who they understood was thinking about running for president of the United States. So I think that's really not a factor. Now, look, I'm not talking about that small group of extreme fanatics like bin Laden who hate anybody who's not like him, hate Jews, hate Christians, hate Muslims who are not of his brand of Islam.
You said that you grew up without anti-Semitism and that most of your friends weren't even Jewish when you were growing up. Hadassah Lieberman, your parents were survivors of the Holocaust. They're from Prague, where you were born. What did it mean to them to have your husband run for vice president of the United States?
My father's not alive, and my mother, she was thrilled. She knows what Joe's all about, and she knows he's capable, and they're with him. So the truth is that my parents came to this country for the hope that it offered them, the hope of democracy, of raising their two children in freedom, and ultimately having a son-in-law who's running for president. So for my parents, I think the point is that 60-plus years ago, they ran away from totalitarianism. And, you know, we're no longer there. We're in a free democracy, and we have to be proud of it. And that was some of what I found when we went across the country in 2000.
There's been a pretty rocky transition of power from the Democratic to Republican majority in the Senate. As we record this on Wednesday morning, the Democrats and Republicans have been unable to reach agreement on the split of committee financing and office space. And until they do reach agreement, Democrats remain in charge of the committees. Is this the most divided Senate you've seen, Joe Lieberman?
Unfortunately, there's been too much division over the 15 years that I've been in the Senate. But right now, this is pretty serious division, and it's too bad with the great crisis that we face as a country. And you know, the next election plays too much of a part in the way both parties conduct themselves. Whereas the people want us to get together and get something done for the country, and Lord knows we've got a lot of unfinished work to do on homeland security, on health care, on education, and most of all right now on the economy. So it's bad now. It's probably as bad as I've seen it, but unfortunately it's not uniquely bad in the 15 years I've been in the Senate.
You are one of the sponsors of the Homeland Security bill. How is our homeland security coming, in your opinion? Not long ago, you said that you thought that, with the exception of new airline security, we were only slightly safer than we were on September 11th. Do you still feel that way?
I'm afraid that is still my opinion, and it's one of the reasons that I'm running for president. You know, within a matter of, 3 or 4 weeks after September 11th, I, together with two or three other colleagues, including a Republican colleague in the Senate, Arlen Specter, introduced a bill to create a Homeland Security Department. President Bush was opposed to it for more than 8 months and then flip-flopped it, came out in favor of it. But we lost 8 important months there in which we could have better organized our defenses. They're very disorganized now, and that disorganization is dangerous. It's not only common sense, it's our constitutional responsibility to provide for the common defense, and that today means homeland defense. And we can't do this without being willing to invest some money. And this is something else I'm going to argue very strongly about President Bush's priorities. In fact, he's trying now to get the Republicans in control of Congress to cut back on the money that we should be spending to support local firefighters, police officers, and the Homeland Security Department. And you're just not going to make America safer at home unless you're willing to invest some money into it. So I think the president's priorities here are all wrong, and as a result, the American people indeed are not much safer from terrorist attack, I'm sorry to say, here at home than they were on September 11th.
Joe Lieberman, in 1991, you co-sponsored with Senator John Warner of Virginia the Senate resolution that authorized the first President Bush to go to war against Saddam Hussein. After the war, you expressed your regret that we ended the war without removing Saddam Hussein from power. In 97 and 98, you worked with Senator Bob Kerry, Senator John McCain, and Trent Lott to introduce the Iraq Liberation Act, which basically made regime change a part of U.S. policy. And I know that you support entering Iraq and overthrowing Saddam Hussein now. And I think you've said that even if the U.N. Security Council doesn't give its approval, we should go in anyways. Are you worried about some of the unintended consequences, short-term or long-term, of a war with Iraq, particularly if we're doing that war without the support of the U.N. Security Council?
Well, look, it's a complicated question. I'll try to give you a relatively brief answer. John McCain and Bob Kerry, Trent Lott, and I hoped with our legislation that we would have created the conditions in which we were supporting Iraqi opposition to Saddam so that by now they would have been in a position internally to overthrow him and liberate the Iraqi people from his dictatorship and brutality, because they probably suffered more than anyone else from it. We're endangered by it. I think that we did the right thing, the U.S. did the right thing in going to the United Nations Security Council. But we have a very strong feeling, and we look at Iraq through the lens of September 11th. And we don't want to look back and say, as we did after September 11th, I wish we had done something more decisive to stop Al-Qaeda before they struck us. So I think we have to reserve all options. I do think in the current context that we've allowed Saddam to confuse the world about what's happening in Iraq. This is not like a police investigation where we've got to find the evidence. We know that he had chemical and biological weapons that were capable of killing millions of people. When he kicked out the UN inspectors in 1998. As Hans Blix of the UN said last week, Saddam still hasn't convinced or even tried to convince the UN what he did with those weapons. And I've seen classified American intelligence, which convinces me that he still has them and he's hiding them. And as long as that's true, the world is endangered, most particularly his Persian Gulf neighbors, whose security is important to us, are endangered by Saddam Hussein. So yes, if and incidentally, at some point, and this is of the commander-in-chief's choosing, the president's, if he doesn't get Security Council or to get Security Council approval, will have to open up more of that classified American intelligence information, not only to the Security Council, but to the American people. And then to make the decision if the Security Council does not approve of, and Saddam doesn't disarm, of military action to change the regime, whether we're prepared not to go it alone, but to create our own international coalition to do it. I'm convinced we'll never have to go it alone. We shouldn't go it alone, but we won't have to.
Are you concerned that at the same, if we go to war with Iraq, at the same time that we become more despised by our enemies, we may become more alienated from our allies who don't support us in that war?
That is a concern, but I hope and believe with proper leadership and advocacy that the Bush administration can convince a significant number of allies to support us. And I'd also say that strength in leadership usually convinces people that that a country like ours believes strongly in what we're trying to do. I mean, we're doing something here for a principle. We're taking on a responsibility that a lot of great powers wouldn't take on, because we worry that if we let Saddam go, it not only is, we've spent 10 years trying to get him to keep the promise he made to the United Nations at the end of the Gulf War. That's a matter of principle, the strength of international law. It's also particularly a matter of the security of his neighbors, and we're willing to take this fight on. Now, I think that if it has to be, and we win it, as I'm convinced we will, it will strengthen American leadership, and it will change the dynamic in currently conflicted parts of the world, including the Middle East, but only if the Bush administration employs not just the sword, but the plowshare, also uses more economic aid, and is willing to extend itself diplomatically to seize the moment post-Iraq to bring about resolution of conflicts in places like the Middle East.
The Democratic candidates for the presidential nomination will be appearing together for the first time later this month in a fundraising event commemorating the 30th anniversary of Roe versus Wade.
Yes.
Usually when politicians speak of their religion in relation to abortion, religion is used to explain their stand against abortion. Mm-hmm. You are an observant Jew. Is your religion guiding your decision, your stand on abortion? And if so, what is it telling you?
Yeah. You know, my religion, like so much else in my life, my life experience, my education, my public service experience informs my decisions, but it doesn't, you know, control them. I mean, my pro-choice record is based on not only my sense of what is right and wrong, generally as a theoretical or philosophical matter, but it is also my own expression of what I believe is right for government and for me as a government leader. And of course, here we have a historic Supreme Court decision, Roe versus Wade, which is the law of the land and sets a standard that I believe makes sense and that we should follow. Incidentally, this issue remains one in which there is a dramatic difference between most Democrats and most Republicans, and certainly between this administration, which has persistently tried to undercut the constitutional right of a woman to make this choice, and Democrats who have persistently supported that right.
So are you saying that your stand on abortion, which is pro-choice, is motivated by your religion, that you're taking that stand in spite of your religion, or that the two are in sync with each other?
Of course, I'm running for president, not for chief theologian. So you get a lot of different points of view in my religion and others, most other religions, on how their religion affects their belief about a very personal issue like abortion. So I say it may have formed my general sense of right and wrong, but my record is a public official. It's a long-time consistent record, and it's ultimately what the campaign for presidency is all about.
Hadassah Lieberman, abortion and the right to have an abortion an important issue for you?
Well, I think it's important to give people the right to choose. What I personally believe, or what my husband personally believes, is our belief. So it's really irrelevant to the discussion, in the sense that if you're pro-choice, you're pro-choice.
When you say believe, you mean your religious beliefs, or just your personal beliefs about abortion are irrelevant?
Well, I think personal beliefs, when you're representing people and it comes to something that's so personal and so private, I don't think it's in the public forum.
So you don't feel the need to talk about what you personally think about abortion, but you do
Not
feel
really.
The need to uphold the Supreme Court decision?
I feel there's a need to uphold that decision and to give women free choice.
And if the decision was somehow reversed, would you feel that you need to uphold the reversal of the decision?
No, I don't, we're not dealing with that. Thank God we've got the choice right now, and that's where we are. So why put up a theoretical? I mean, it's irrelevant. It's not going to happen. We're going to have to make sure that pro-choice is available for women.
Can I try an interpretation of my wife? Because we've had this discussion. She doesn't like it when people press me or her about the impact of what somebody thinks our religious doctrine is on a public decision. And I think that's what she's saying, that question is a personal private one. That is the impact of the religion. Ultimately, we want to be judged on our public record.
Well, taking religion out of the equation, do you feel equally uncomfortable just talking about your personal feelings about abortion, or maybe religion enters into those personal feelings, which makes it difficult to talk about?
No, I mean, I think that our society has made the right decision on this, as reflected by the Supreme Court decision, and that the choice ought to be there, but that we also, as a society, ought to be trying, as President Clinton used to say, to make abortions as safe, legal, and rare as possible. That's, you know,
and respectful to people who have different ideas personally. We need to respect one another. That's something that I think we've lost a lot these days. You know, we each have our views, and yet, you know, we need to respect the other's view. That's, I think, the problem we have worldwide.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you both very much for talking with us. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Terry. It was a very interesting discussion. I wish you well and look forward to talking to you again.
Joe and Hadassah Lieberman have written a new memoir about the 2000 presidential campaign called An Amazing Adventure.